Okay, hi everyone.
Hi everyone.
Well, I'm really not doing much. I'm just I'm going to be showing what Julie's presented and just opening to remind you of our overall theme, which is Babylon under foreign rule. I mean, sorry, Israel under foreign rule, which is Babylon this time. And so I just want us to keep in mind, as we're looking at all these amazing aspects and the greatness of Babylon, that Babylon's the symbol of the kingdoms of men, and that the message is for us as well. That's why I gave you that little bookmark, because we can all get caught up in the kingdoms of men. Babylon is the symbol in the Bible, right from the Tower of Babel through to Revelation, where you've got the judgment of the harlot of Babylon. And the message is the same. We just get caught up in worshipping the, you know, we get bedazzled by Babylon. It's you know, the day-to-day, the greatness, the power, the cleverness, the inventions. And we're going to be looking at how great Babylon was and all its aspects. So just remember, it all applies to us. And if you look at these two quotes on this bookmark, one is Jeremiah, which says, "Flee Babylon, run for your lives." And Israel didn't do this. They stayed in Babylon. Their hearts, only a few went back to Israel, and even they didn't get it right. Their hearts were in Babylon in general. And if you compare Jeremiah 50:51 with Revelation 17 and 18, which is the harlot of Babylon, you'll find that Revelation quotes great slabs out of Jeremiah. So it's really thinking of the same thing. The harlot of Babylon is not the Roman Catholic Church. It's what Israel was. Their love of worshipping things of the world instead of worshipping God. False worship. And so the harlot of Babylon in Revelation is very much what we can get caught up in. So when we're told to flee Babylon, it's really for us, and we've got to keep that in mind. So, okay, so Julie's put together some things she found about the greatness of Babylon, and she wrote this little introductory note, which I'm going to read out, so I'm Julie now. Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Julie.
I'm sorry I can't be there today, and I hope you have a rewarding study. I became fascinated by the topic and so asked to present from afar. My topic this morning is the greatness of Babylon. When first asked to look at this topic, I found some interesting YouTubes on the mystery of Babylon. I'll send links if anyone's interested, because she's only quoted part of it. I've prepared a short montage for this morning, as I also found an interesting talk on the subject by Chuck Misler on the mystery of Babylon. I also collected a selection of images on the extent of the empire and the culture, as well as artifacts and reliefs of the walls, some now held in the Louvre and Berlin, and others that are perhaps destroyed by the insurgents, ISIS, and you've seen much to the horror of historians. As you'll discover during this morning, Babylon the city and Babylon the empire have held a captive audience for many generations, with interest both from Bible students and historians, beginning with the time of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel through to the Neo-Babylonian Empire, which is the New Babylonian Empire, which is what they called the Kingdom of Nebuchadnezzar, which only lasted 70 years, up to the current day, and even as the relevance of Babylon in the future, in Revelation we're talking about. So Babylon had enormous high walls and was an enormous city, and Nebuchadnezzar had undertaken a great deal of building works, including restoring temples and towers. The river Euphrates runs right through the city, and I was puzzled about flooding, the flooding prophecies, until I read about the high walls and a series of tunnels and gates that protected the city. There was also a wide procession way running from one end of the city to the other. It was also one of the great wonders of the world, well, the Hanging Gardens part of it, But Julie suggests here it may have actually belonged to Nineveh. The capture of the much-fortified city of Babylon came about as punishment for the pride, arrogance, and disrespect of the God of the Jews by Belshazzar, the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, who was badly shaken by the writing on the wall at his banquet. So in the end, Babylon had fallen for much the same reason that Jerusalem had fallen 70 years before. Remember that Babylon had even been a player. Remember that before Babylon had even been a player on the world stage, Hezekiah had bragged about Babylon and shown the king of Babylon the possessions of the temple, his whole treasury. I hope you find the presentation interesting. I'd just like to also mention Julie has a bit about the writing, the Babylonian cuneiform writing. And so I looked it up and I found that, you know, this whole region, Mesopotamia, was the oldest part of the history of the world. And they had writing there that went back to 3500 BC. This was like pictorial writing, which developed into the cuneiform style, and then that was developed by the Phoenicians, and then Nebuchadnezzar in his time, they developed that writing even more. So like 3500 BC, the oldest known writing from the world that came from that area, like this is right back here before the flood, before Noah, they had writing, you know. So we've always, you know, we didn't come from cavemen, you know, God created people and they were always smart. They were always into all these things. So we'll now try and play Julie's presentation she's put together.
And it's mentioned over 300 times in the Bible, so we know it's significant. Beyond all the cities except Jerusalem. In fact, it's even alluded to three times in Jesus' genealogy. And it was the capital of the first world dictator. And many of us suspect it's going to be the capital of the last world dictator. And that may be emerging on our near horizon, which causes us to focus on this in this discussion. The first world dictator was named Nimrod.
Is that all right?
The name itself means we will rebel. He was the first world dictator. He founded a group of cities. In Genesis chapter 10, there's a mistranslation in most of our Bibles. It says he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. That's misleading. What it actually should be translated, he's a mighty hunter in defiance of the Lord. The Onkelos translation and other translations that really focus on this make that distinction. And he led a global, at that time, rebellion. And he created a city and a tower called Babel. Bab means gate, and El, of course, is the word for God. So Babel actually was originally intended to mean gateway to the gods. God uses a strange technique to dispel this in Genesis chapter 11, where he has the confusion of tongues. And so we almost have a play on words here because we speak of Babel even today, Babel, of meaning meaningless gibberish. All these people suddenly discovered they couldn't communicate with each other. But this was the beginning of the city of Babylon. And there was a ziggurat built by Nebuchadnezzar, presumably on the same foundation that the original Tower of Babel was on, and it's called Entemenaki, and we'll take a look at that. That term in Chaldean was intended to mean the building which is the foundation of heaven and earth. And many people assume that they were trying to build a tower to heaven. It's not that simple, but it certainly was a temple that was in some way a gateway to the gods. Many people speculate that it had astrological implications also.
Mesopotamia, the land between the rivers, is between the Euphrates and the Tigris, and was once the birthplace of culture. Over 2,500 years ago, a huge metropolis arose in the heart of this region, Babylon. The man who ruled over it made the city one of the wonders of the world, and his name was Nebuchadnezzar. The structures constructed by the king of the Euphrates became myths, like the huge Tower of Babel, which was to appeal to the imagination of generations to come. Today, only rubble remains, but modern archaeologists can gain an understanding of the lost world from the remaining fragments. Latest technology preserves the cuneiform signs, the oldest written language, on thousands of ancient tablets, and scientists can now decipher them. The images can bring the lost city of Babylon back to life, and with it comes a far greater understanding of Nebuchadnezzar and of the cosmology of the Babylonians. The rediscovery of Nebuchadnezzar's world began 100 years ago in Lebanon. The French consul, Henri Poignon, explored the region round El Hermel in search of ancient artistic treasures. At the time, there were many expeditions by colonial administrators. The 19th century was the time of great discoveries. Wherever they went, they seemed to make new and important finds. The legendary city of Troy had been excavated. Egyptian hieroglyphics could be deciphered. And on a hot October day, Henri Poignon made a discovery that would later be acclaimed as an archaeological sensation. Poignon worked on the assumption that the vast empire of Babylon once extended to this point on the shores of the Mediterranean, and he discovered proof. On a stone wall, the portrait of a king had been chiseled out, overpowering a lion with his arm. According to the inscription, it was Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. In the fading light of day, Henri Poignon managed to take a sensational photograph. This is the earliest depiction of Nebuchadnezzar that has been found. The weathered relief in stone unites ancient myths and legends. By Nebuchadnezzar benefited from the influence of the two great rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris. As long ago as 2,500 years before Nebuchadnezzar, works of art were created that bear witness to the cultural achievements of the period and convey a curious picture of the people of that age. The Sumerian people created an entirely new culture, heralded by a revolutionary development. The invention of cuneiform script 3,000 years before Christ, and the cultural growth that resulted from the invention of a written language, was to reach its pinnacle in Nebuchadnezzar's vast empire of Babylon. New technology spread from ancient Uruk to the whole of Mesopotamia, extending far to the north. It also spread to the Mediterranean in the west and to the cultural sphere of Palestine. Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom extended as far as Egypt and Jerusalem, a veritable empire. Jerusalem, the holy city of David, an ancestral home of all Jews. But 2,600 years ago, it was not the sprawling metropolis that it is today. Protected by the city walls, no more than a few thousand Jews inhabited the small area around the Temple Mount. Nebuchadnezzar was able to breach the stone circle and leveled the holy city. An ancient relief depicts the battle. The Babylonians scaled the walls of the city with the help of fortified towers. The defenders could not match the superior military technology. The invaders had metal armor, stone catapults, and carefully planned strategies. The well-thought-out plans were highly effective, along with the devastating waves of arrows fired by thousands of archers. Nebuchadnezzar used his military might to good effect. Thousands of enemies were mown down, while the survivors were taken to Babylon as prisoners of war. For the Jews, it was a terrible catastrophe, the wrath of God, and Babylon was seen as the hated site of exile, with Babel known as the hotbed of vice. To this day, the remains of Babylon can be seen in Iraq. But at the beginning of the 20th century, all that could be seen of the former metropolis were foundation stones and rubble. The buildings, just 20 years old, are mere reconstructions. These imaginative edifices do provide some concept of the splendor and glory of an ancient city that was home to a million inhabitants. The massive tiled walls of Babylon were counted among the seven wonders of the ancient world. But it was also claimed that there was a second wonder of the world to be admired in Babylon. The Hanging Gardens of Princess Semiramis, said to have been the mistress of Nebuchadnezzar. Though the historical truth behind this figure is also lost in the fairy tale legends that surround the city. The Greek historian Herodotus, who is believed to have visited Babylon 100 years after the death of Nebuchadnezzar, was one of many people captivated by the capital. Herodotus marveled at the legendary dimensions of the Tower of Babel, though he could only guess as to its function. As he tried to describe the sights, he let his imagination run wild as he enthused about the city with streets 16 meters wide, walls 25 meters thick, and an urban area that stretched for 96 kilometers. And so the metropolis on the Euphrates became the subject of fantastic legends that were passed down through the generations, until the German archaeologist Robert Koldewey decided to search for the truth at the beginning of the last century. When Koldewey reached the presumed site of the ancient city of Babylon, all that could be seen were piles of rubble covered by the drifting desert sands. But Koldewey was certain that the legendary Babel was buried there. The initial excavations revealed remains of vast city walls and confirmed his belief that only the capital of Babylon could have had such mighty defenses. Koldewey had found the remains of the walls that Herodotus had reported with such admiration, and the Babylonians had insulated the tiled structures against humidity by using bitumen, an amazing technological achievement for the day. Koldewey was obsessed with the idea of excavating the whole of the legendary city. For 18 years, even during the First World War, he excavated the site almost without interruption. Today, his followers still work with shovels and spades. The excavations that began in Iraq 100 years ago have taken them on an archaeological journey back through time to the Empire of Babylon. In Sippar, a good 50 kilometers from Koldewey's excavations, the team have discovered a new archaeological sensation, a library from the period of Nebuchadnezzar. However, the archaeologists aren't looking for works of art or precious metals, but a far more valuable treasure, inscribed tablets. Cuneiform writing, thousands of years old, recording the ideas and beliefs of Babylonians in Nebuchadnezzar's day. The archaeologists have been able to unearth over 300 clay tablets, valuable texts describing rites and customs, myths and politics. Up to 100 years ago, Carl Dewey wrote that the ancient culture of Babylon was buried under a shroud of drifting sand. And even today, experts estimate that thousands of texts are still hidden beneath the ground in Babylon. Carl Dewey wrote, "The ruins remind me of the prophet's curse in the Bible, and nevermore shall Babylon be inhabited, and nobody shall live there again." Did the biblical curse really come true? And could Carl Dewey have guessed that 100 years later, new methods would be developed to shed light on the mystery of Babylon?